Yeah, like I get it. I must be abducted like every 5 days because it's like, you know, are you driving along? And suddenly you're further along than you thought you would be. It's like literally any time I listen to a podcast while I'm driving.
Since the dawn of 2009, one TV show has dared to ask the most important questions about the origins of our world. That show is Ancient Aliens.
Yet until now, no one has asked the biggest question of all. Is Ancient Aliens total bullshit?
And that's what our show's about. Finding the truth under the nonsense of one of television's most popular franchises.
This is...
more like Ancient Aliens.
Straightforward.
But straightforward. I will say as a linguist that no one's wrong. Everyone is just different and they're going to have their own accent and way of pronouncing that, and that's okay.
This is more like Ancient Aliens, a podcast about the History Channel show Ancient Aliens. I'm Toby Ball, the creator and host of the UFO podcast Strange Arrivals.
And I'm Brandon R. Reynolds, a radio journalist and UFO interested party.
And today's guest is Karen Stalsnow, who is one of the two hosts of the Monster Talk podcast. Karen, welcome.
Thank you. Good to be here.
So we'll get more into Karen's work in this field later. But now we're just going to jump into taking a look at today's episode. Today we are looking at Operation Hybrid, and that's season 14, episode 10. The episode starts in the Philippines very dramatically with the discovery of a new hominid that goes back.
Nowadays.
What's that?
Homonym is the term that's been used nowadays too.
Homonym. Okay.
Yeah.
Starts the discovery of a new hominid in the Philippines that goes back 67,000 years. So they talk a little bit about that, but the point that they are trying to make is that sort of pre-Homo sapiens dominating, there are all these different hominid species. And the question is, why are Homo sapiens the only ones left? And this being Ancient Aliens, the reason why is probably because of ET experiments.
It turns out not natural evolution, but tinkering from beyond the stars.
Yeah, they call it extraterrestrial interference.
And it's also true that they set it up such that it's not just, hey, aliens are tinkering with us, but the early quote from Tsoukalos is, you know, and the narrator sets it up, is this possibly the end of humankind? And then he says, perhaps more hybrids are being created right now in order to continue this extraterrestrial evolution. So they're setting up like, well, it may have been happening in the past. What's going to happen in our future?
Right. And I guess I don't know enough about evolution or how all these things kind of played out. Although I do know that Homo sapiens actually, you know, most people have some Neanderthal DNA in there. So apparently there was some, like, I hate to say crossbreeding, but sort of interspecies relationships maybe that resulted in in children that end up having children and eventually get to us. So they also kind of posit like these other, I think they say there are at least seven other species, and they consider these to be failed experiments that the ETs just kind of let play out and go away.
Are what we're looking at here failed experiments, prototypes? Are we just the latest experiment? Were there previously other branches of the human family that were themselves either created or enhanced, but which didn't quite make the grade?
You make a really good point that the average viewer doesn't really know much about paleoanthropology. They don't know too much about evolution, and they're kind of banking on that, I guess, that the average person isn't going to understand this or have a background in it and, you know, potentially not think critically enough about it to question that they're kind of mixing some science in with a lot of pseudoscience.
Yeah, I think critical thinking is something they're hoping nobody's going to do about most of the show.
Yeah,
at least that
sure
was my takeaway. All right. Ancient astronaut theorists think that there is evidence of these ET experiments and ET, you know, quote unquote interference in evolution that can be found in the oldest civilizations. And they go and talk about the Anunnaki, which are Sumerian. And they keep calling it Sumeria, which I thought it was Sumer, but I could be wrong. That could be a new thing. And then it's, you know, the classic, often said in quotes, that the Anunnaki, who are these sort of Sumerian deities, it's often said that they were involved in genetic engineering.
Often said. People are talking.
Yeah, I don't even know what to say about that. Like, I don't know who says that other than maybe ancient astronaut theorists. Or why do they say it? I can't imagine what in Sumerian mythology or whatever would lead one to believe that there was genetic engineering involved. But that's just another thing I'm not an expert in, so I'm not entirely sure.
I'm wondering who is an expert, because the term ancient astronaut theorists, I mean, what is that? What kind of an expert is that? And with the guests that they have on the show, I mean, they're authors and they're journalists and physicists, but they don't seem to have any people who could talk knowledgeably about this field.
Yeah, they're very clear that they don't call them ancient astronaut scientists at any point. The word scientist does not come up very often except as a pejorative, I think. So then we have Linda Moulton Howe, speaking of people who don't have real expertise, maybe. She makes the case that the Anunnaki make hybrids to, quote, stake out their territory. Again, whatever that means.
Right. And the comparison that they make, which they often do a lot, is as sort of a gotcha. They figure out how to cross-pollinate these cultures. They say, well, this happened here in Sumeria, but then if you go to Teotihuacan, these same guys are also there, and they show side by side of the statue of one winged figure and then compared to the Anunnaki. And they're like, see, mm-hmm. They're the same. But of course, they look nothing alike other than the fact that one has sort of a representation of maybe feathers on his arms and the other one has obvious wings. And what's more interesting about the Anunnaki, which is, you know, a sculpture in a wall, is it appears that he's wearing two wristwatches, but they never said anything about that.
That's another episode.
Not just one, but two.
I think it's interesting that they talk about other species that have gone extinct and we've found fossil evidence of them, but we haven't found any fossil evidence of these supposed hybrids.
Isn't the whole point of the hybrids that we're supposed to be the evidence of that? Like, it's the perfect crime in that way. Like, you won't find them anywhere because, as they show in the one little shot, which always depicts, you know, modern life as like a slow motion scene of just a bunch of people walking down a sidewalk. Like, that's us.
Yep.
We're the hybrids.
We're the ones that are left. We're the perfect ones, I guess.
We're the ones that are left.
I would hate to leave the Sumeria section of this without, at one point, somebody refers to present-day ancient Sumeria, which I thought was a great line. From there, we go to Iraq. They talk about an obelisk that depicts a king's accomplishments and has some half-human, half-animal creatures on it. It seems like another one of the things that you see again and again in the show is that instead of thinking, wow, this is like a mythological thing in the course of creating legends and stuff, the idea of people who are half person, half animal, like that seems like kind of a universal thing across cultures or whatever. But instead, they think this is like a clear evidence of these things actually existing.
I mean, my understanding is that those were images of maybe monkeys and primates and so animals that were new to that culture that they'd captured in those engravings. But they were depicted as being real animals, not hybrids, some of them.
Right.
There's always a metaphor failure syndrome that goes on with ancient aliens where some stuff that is obviously supposed to be symbolic is taken literally here. And over here, it's like, well, clearly that's just a part of their literature and art. But these guys are depicting a literal reality. And that comes in and out, you know, as sort of as it's convenient. But I thought it was interesting. One line about the centaur, and then they move past it as quickly as possible without explaining it.
Well, I think that that's what they're trying to do, really overload the viewer with theories. And I mean, they're just jumping from topic to topic in this episode. You know, if they're not talking about hybrids, they're talking about blood types, or they're talking about cattle mutilations and abductees, and it's just going from thing to thing. And I think they're just trying to, you know, overload people so that you are just overwhelmed by the apparent evidence.
So we follow up this thing about half human, half animal hybrids in mythology with this super weird story about a Russian doctor who was attaching extra heads onto dogs. And at first I thought he was doing head transplants, but then when you actually see the pictures of these poor animals, it's actually animals with two heads that he's like attached a head to a different part of the body. The implication being it's just a very small step from a dog with two heads to attaching human heads to animals, which I guess, sure.
Well, and as the narrator says, for ancient astronaut theorists, all of these animal-human hybrid experiments are nothing new. So the Russian is just catching up to where technology has been for thousands of years otherwise. But that was extremely sad and weird. I mean, one of the funny phenomena about ancient aliens is the things that you accidentally learn along the way that are like, oh, I didn't know about that particular aspect of culture, history, science. Mm-hmm. And understanding like where it's based in something very real, like they're going to talk about CRISPR, you know, which is genetic engineering technology, which is very real and just won a Nobel Prize for one of the creators. So you can learn a lot about all kinds of things by watching Ancient Aliens. It's just, again, a matter of figuring out where to hide your eyes, where to run screaming from the room. But the dog thing I thought was, while sad, also extremely interesting.
Yeah, I thought it was very unethical. And they talked about the transplants being a success. And so I looked into it and they were a success for 38 days. So not a success. That's not what I would call a success anyway. And they talked about mixing DNA, but no, that was really grafting one part onto another. That's not mixing DNA in a kind of lab sense that they're implying. But then they were talking about that Chinese scientist after that as well, and who had genetically altered babies, that section. And they neglected to mention that he was sentenced to 3 years in jail and found guilty of illegal medical practices for what he was doing. It lasted 38 days and the dogs died. So not a success.
No. There's also a weird detail about pigs that have human blood. It's very strange.
There was a man who just had a pig heart transplanted into him, and then that's been successful. Kind of like Karen was saying, that, you know, none of these have a very long life expectancy. Yeah, they're still tinkering with the technology. But, you know, you could build a whole episode around the actual science of hybridizing, you know, people and the way that they're, you know, trying to grow new organs and the way they're using pigs as essentially vessels for, you know, at some point for growing things like human kidneys that you can then transplant. Well, that stuff is for real and is coming along. They sort of skate over that and head very quickly back to, you know, the weird part of things.
To prove their points.
Yeah. So, of course, we get back to the ancient astronaut theorists who said these hybridization procedures were done all of the time in ancient times, and we're just catching up. And then, as Karen was saying, not to get any dust on us, we move quickly to animal mutilations, which is grim.
And I have literally interviewed thousands now. You hear, I saw this kind of light. I saw this beam luring an animal to the pasture and it was mutilated. Somebody else, I saw this animal coming up in a beam of light and later it was found mutilated.
What we know is that something is harvesting body parts, blood, cells, DNA from animals.
Like I remember in the 70s, maybe when I was like a kid and was into UFOs, I remember picking up like a UFO magazine and it was just all about cattle mutilations and it was scarring because the pictures they're very grim. Like the way the carcasses look, especially the kind of grainy black and white photos. So this is Linda Moulton Howe's like sort of bailiwick, and she's kind of all over it. I don't know if either of you had any strong reactions to this or thoughts about this part of it.
Yeah, I was watching this with my 9-year-old who captured some of these kind of depressing elements. But it was interesting because the first thing that he said when he saw those photographs was that, oh, those were eaten by bugs. So I was like, okay, so my 9-year-old can spot this immediately. Why can't these supposed experts tell that? I mean, the cattle mutilations have been discredited and debunked and recreated for decades now. So, you know, we know what's going on can be confusing sometimes to farmers if they're not familiar with what's going on. But I mean, it's usually just a matter of animals dying from disease or starvation or something like that. And then blood that settles to the underside of the animal that kind of creates the illusion that the blood has been drained from it. And then you get insects which will just eat the kind of soft tissue down to the bone area. But they're talking about it being surgical precision, the way that these animals are supposedly attacked by some external force. And it's, I mean, we've really understood this for some time. I mean, it's just, it's a fact of nature and it happens a lot and often it goes unseen, especially people who live in cities. You know, they're not going to be familiar with this kind of phenomenon, but it's just natural. It's not, not aliens. And it's kind of strange that they're really still appealing to that theory because it's so debunked.
To add to that, there's also the question of, well, how come these particular organs were removed? And it's like, well, scavengers and predators seek out particular organs. Yeah. You know, they'll always eat the liver because that's the most nutrient-rich one. So there are always these fairly mundane explanations for that stuff. But then you have to back up to think, you have this extremely advanced race, supposedly, who's flying around over, you know, the plains of Colorado or Kansas or whatever, finds one particular cow they want, beams it up, carves out some things, and then returns the cow. It's like, why don't you just keep the cow, you know? And why do you need multiple cows? And how much genetic material do you need from different cows? There's always a question of labor that's involved, where they seem to think that these aliens are going to work extremely hard to do stuff that doesn't seem like it's the most efficient way to do it. You know, like, well, why don't you just go to a stockyard and like suck up a bunch of cows in one go? That's way more cost effective. I don't know why they have to keep hunting and picking here. It's like, oh, no, that one down there. Not that one. The one next to it. That's the one we want. And we only want the lips.
So this, of course, brings us into the ancient astronaut theorists' idea that we are just one of many species that DNA is being extracted from in order to create a super multi-species hybrid. That sounds awesome, quite honestly.
Are extraterrestrials extracting DNA from all manner of earthly species in an effort to create so-called alien-human hybrids?
We start getting into stuff that I'm more familiar with, which is Betty and Barney Hill, fellow New Hampshire natives. So they pop up very, very briefly as sort of the first abduction narratives. And this kind of segues into this idea that thousands of other abductions have been sort of credibly reported, and that one of the commonalities is that they have DNA extracted. Which, A, I'm not quite sure what that means. Does that mean they're taking blood samples or skin or whatever?
Well, I think, you know, they could take DNA samples from their hair. But in these cases, why is it always so salacious and titillating? It's always sperm or eggs or something like that. You know, it's never something just innocuous.
Yeah. Yeah. So for people who aren't familiar with the Betty and Barney Hill story, and this is sort of the blueprint for stories that go forward, but they get brought up on a spaceship. Betty has a huge needle that's sort of stuck into her abdomen, I guess her uterus.
Alien IVF, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. There's a thing with Carl Sagan in a radio interview with Betty and Barney Hill, like sort of referring to sort of the Freudian aspects of it. Anyway, it's a very interesting story, but this is one of the things that kind of continues as the story spins out into further decades, is this fixation by the alien abductors on human reproduction. And that, of course, fits right in with this sort of hybrid stuff. Any other thoughts about this before we move on to what I found to be the most confounding and boring part of this show?
I can't wait to hear about the most boring part of the
show. Yeah, I mean, there's one thing about Ancient Aliens is that it's not like boring isn't really one of its big issues. Like Aaron said, you're just going from topic to topic to topic. Mm-hmm. And even if it's just bizarre and maybe not that interesting, you're just there for, you know, 3-4 minutes and you're on to something else. However, there's a segment on Rh positive and negative blood. If it was me, I just wouldn't have even run this because I didn't really get why this is that important. But the idea is that Rh negative blood, for some reason, is overrepresented in abductees. And then they're like, you know who else? What other population has Rh negative blood overrepresented? It's the Basques.
That's it.
They don't really follow up with, are we now supposed to think that Basques are hybrid aliens?
I mean, if you follow the logic, right? And first of all, Linda Moulton Howe shuts down her own argument by saying, you know, they're vastly overrepresented. Then she says, I mean, no one's studied this, but it's got to be something like 3 or 4 people out of every 10 have Rh negative blood. And then so you go, okay, so that means that these people are going to be more likely to be targets for alien abduction. Then you get into this Basque thing. You have this whole group of people who have this Rh negative blood. So then the conclusion must be, well, then the Basques are more likely to be kidnapped by aliens. But that's never actually established. In fact, the argument is we know that ancient people moved through this area, and so therefore maybe ancient people have Rh negative blood. But then the question there is like, well, didn't ancient people move through everywhere? I mean, that's where modern people right. come from. Anyway, so the whole argument really falls apart. Maybe there's an episode about that in the future just called Project Basque or something.
Maybe. But I do agree with you, Brandon, with Linda, how she, you know, destroyed her own argument there. But I don't know where she's getting those statistics from that she's talking about. But at any rate, Basque is a really interesting language. So just in terms of linguistics, we call it a language isolate, which means that it developed independently of other languages. So it's really interesting. But it says to me that it wouldn't be such a strange thing to think that this area might be an enclave for other things in terms of genetics. So that if you've got a unique language, then you might have some other unique things going on in terms of genes that don't have anything to do with aliens, but just the fact that this group of people has developed independently and been isolated from other communities for a very long period of time. We can see that reflected in languages. Why would that be something that aliens have done when it comes to genes?
Yeah.
So Basques, maybe hybrids, who knows? And then so we move on to, you know, some people claim that they are actually hybrids. And to sort of illustrate this, we go to an alien con where I think it's Linda Moulton Howe asks people in the audience, have you been abducted by aliens? Did you miss time? Do you remember seeing a figure in your bedroom in the middle of the night? Like these different things that are sort of proxies for were you abducted by aliens? And then this voiceover talks about how credible the witnesses are. And then you get a witness who says, the reptilian who visits me on a regular basis, and then goes on.
The reptilian who visits me on a regular basis. Apparently he realized I was infertile and he backed away.
It's just playing into all this stuff that's been pretty thoroughly researched and debunked in the past. And what they're doing is just ignoring that and putting it out to people who I think aren't aware of these things that would sort of provide explanations for experiences that they've had that don't involve aliens.
Yeah, well, I don't know if you guys knew that that conference was run by the network, the A&E network.
Oh.
So that's a kind of self-serving thing that they're running this off the back of their show. And as you say, Toby, these are believers who are attending these events. I didn't think it was a particularly statistically significant show of hands, though, when they said how many people have experienced this. I actually thought at a conference like that, there would be a lot more people claiming that they'd had experiences. But yeah, they certainly didn't talk about possible natural explanations for some of these claims, like sleep paralysis or hallucinations, or I think just the fact that there's a lot of fantasy going on here. These people who really want to believe and they read so much about these kinds of experiences that there they are having their own experiences.
Yeah, it's a way of having a connection with a community. You have somewhere to go, you got people to hang out with. And if you go to any convention, you always find people, you know, they have these shared interests, whether it's comics or movies or whatever it is. And yeah, the whole point of acceptance is how much are you a participant in this thing? How much do you know about this particular anime series or Star Wars or whatever it is? And so this is the same kind of thing, except the knowledge base that you have is dependent on having had some sort of crazy experiences. So yeah, you get rewarded and you get on a very popular TV show if you go up and talk about what did or did not extract your sperm. And speaking of people sharing their experiences, Karen, why don't you tell us about yourself, about your work?
Okay, well, I'm not a contactee. I have never been abducted or anything like that, unfortunately. Not yet, anyway. Too soon to tell. I'm a co-host of Monster Talk, the podcast about cryptids and legendary creatures and interesting animals and bad people, all kinds of things, along with my colleague Blake Smith. So that's how we met Toby, because we brought him on the show to talk about strange arrivals. So we, even though monsters is in the title of our show, we talk a lot about paranormal, supernatural claims in general. So we talk about anything from psychic abilities and ghosts through to alien claims. And so we've done lots of shows talking about extraterrestrials and the history of these kinds of beliefs. And I've written a lot too about people who've claimed all kinds of things, people like Jeff Peckman and Stan Romanek and that crowd who've come out of the Colorado area that I've dealt with in the past. And, you know, written about speculative claims of alien languages and just all things connected to aliens.
Because you're also a linguist, right?
I am, yes, yep. So my area is semantics, meaning, and language, but I have written about xenolinguistics, and so claims about, or if there was an alien language, what would it look like? What would it sound like? Because there are a lot of people in the community that claim that they can speak alien languages, or they have talked with aliens or communicated with them telepathically, all kinds of stories out there.
And did it sound anything like the Basque language?
I'll have to keep an eye out for that one, or an ear out.
Yeah. What are the commonalities? I mean, when people are generating an alien language, is there anything about it that you can extract? Like, oh, there's an overemphasis on, words for needle.
Well, these claims have been around for quite some time with people writing supposed alien writing systems and coming up with languages. So this has really been around for hundreds of years. And typically the alien languages look like languages that are on Earth, interestingly. So they might sound alien to people who speak English. They might look a bit like or sound like Japanese or something that seems foreign and exotic to speakers of English. There are a lot of claims out there, and with people who say, what's his name, Sheldon Nidal, I think, Nidal, but he's spoken about words that he's received from aliens from other planets. And the reality is, if we were ever to encounter aliens, why would it sound like English? Why would their communication be like ours? Why would it be a system of symbols? Maybe it would be mental telepathy. Maybe it would be communicating with musical sounds, you know, or colors or something like that. I mean, we have so many different systems of communication across animals on Earth as it is. You know, why would it look and sound like an exotic language that someone might be familiar with? So all the claims are pretty suspicious. Then you've got the whole Jim Pennington's binary code thing too. There are some people who think, oh, well, if aliens could communicate with us, they would use a binary code system. But, you know, you have books like the Bible code theories and Da Vinci Code. And I think if you take any kind of data set that's big enough, you could get any kind of message that you wanted from that.
Karen, had you watched much Ancient Aliens in your own podcasting work?
I tried not.
Or just as a fan?
I've watched episodes here and there. I kind of lost touch with it for a while because they're so prolific now and they've just done so many episodes. I don't know, it's like The Simpsons or something. I've been doing this for a long time. But I have watched specific episodes here and there if we've talked about a particular topic. But this one really blew me away because it was just so many, throwing so many things against the wall to see what would stick.
Yeah, it really was a grab bag of all of the different ideas. I mean, if you watch this episode alone, I feel like it's a pretty good entree into the whole mythology of, you know, the alien experience. It covers just a lot of the different tropes that you're likely to encounter.
So the next thing that they kind of run into is this woman, Barbara Lamb. We don't spend much time on this, but she does regression hypnosis and is convinced that she has hypnotized actual hybrids.
I've been conducting long, long interviews and have been doing regressions with them. And out of all that material, I have become convinced that they are indeed ET human hybrids living here on Earth.
And she makes the claim that our subconscious records everything that happens to us, which it clearly does not, or at least does not in a way that we can then spit out under regression hypnosis. Regression hypnosis has been shown to be completely unreliable in these sort of alien abduction type things. And she talks to a guy named Robert Fullington, who, you know, I'm not really sure why they pick him out of everybody, but there's like a brief moment of watching him supposedly being hypnotized and kind of talking about stuff that happened. I mean, regression hypnosis is kind of weak sauce at this point, I feel like.
I mean, I think that's a very old conception of memory, is that we access certain things consciously, but somewhere deep down, it's all being recorded exactly as it is. And it's just a question of, can you get at it? And the idea that it's all available, you just have to have the right kind of artist or artisan get in there and plumb it out. Whereas the reality is, we now know more and more about how memory works. And it's like, no, every time you recall a memory, you're really recreating it from the ground up. So there is a certain mixture of things that actually happen that your senses recorded, and the fantasy or the desire, or the desire to put a narrative on top of those things means that, you know, you can revisit a memory over and over and it'll evolve over time, or it'll be completely invented out of whole cloth. And, you know, I think if you're in the suggestive state of hypnosis, it's probably more likely that, you know, these are just guided dreams where everything is ginned up from, you know, this person's personal experiences, whatever. And then also the larger myth of the UFO abduction thing. Like you were saying about the Hills, there wasn't a story of alien probing abduction before that. But then after that, there were a bunch of them because now they had a template.
Yeah. Interestingly, my husband was a part of the UFO alien community going back a couple of decades ago. He was a believer at the time. He thought he'd had some encounters and some experiences. And so he actually went through therapy with Barbara Lamb. And I mean, the whole thing has really been discredited by licensed hypnotherapists over the decades, and, you know, for creating false memories. And you can kind of see her in action too, you know, using leading questions, things like, were the others lying down on tables? Because my husband watched this with me, this portion, and he thought that that session was staged. He didn't think that that was actually happening, that it wasn't really a real session. Yeah, I mean, what these people typically do is that they'll ask leading questions. When were you abducted? What did the aliens do to you to presuppose that these things happened? And, you know, Toby, you're very familiar with this. And a lot of people who've been in this game for a long time made names for themselves and a lot of money. And
Yeah, so just another example, and I this is getting a little bit into what I was sort of surprised wasn't here, is that early people who sold a lot of books and were very prominent in the whole alien abduction hybridization theorizing, Bud Hopkins and John Mack and David Jacobs, like, they don't make any appearance here. So Bud Hopkins, for instance, he was essentially a modern artist who got interested in UFOs and UFO abductions. So he would do regression hypnosis on people, but he had all these books out already. So people who read the books kind of knew what the template was. So he was like doing hypnosis on these people who were telling roughly the same story, but it was because he'd already written about the story in his books. And there was even like some pre-prepping where he would talk to them beforehand and give them materials and stuff. So it's not surprising that when they were hypnotized, they were coming forward with the exact stuff that they associated with him. Yeah. And that's something that Carol Rainey, who was married to him and was sort of a research partner of his, eventually kind of realized was the amount of manipulation that was occurring before hypnosis, the way stories were being spun, then sort of exposed all of this in an article called priests of high strangeness and spoke out about it for years afterwards. You know, Bud Hopkins and those guys thought that like hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people were being abducted, but that they just didn't remember it because they had their memories were wiped clean and that you could only get them through hypnosis, or they had a survey you could take. You know, if you answered a certain number of those right, they'd say you could very likely have been abducted.
But it's everyone, because we had a copy of those questions from the website, and it was pages long, and it was really running the whole gamut of human experiences. Yeah. So, of course, you're going to answer yes to a lot of these things that just happen to everyone as part of the human condition.
Yeah. So there's a brief thing about why did Neanderthals die out? They had bigger brains than us. And I think it was Giorgio says they had bodies like refrigerators.
Neanderthals not only had much, much larger brains, but also their bodies. I mean, they were walking refrigerators. They were as strong as you can imagine. So what made the difference here? Extraterrestrials.
So between those two, it seems...
Meaning they were big, not that they were cold.
Right. Well,
yeah, that's how I first heard it. I thought, I didn't know that reference, the bodybuilding reference or whatever. And yeah, I thought that he was talking about, well, like, because they came from Europe and cold areas.
Or they can store things inside them.
But I guess Neanderthals actually survive in ourselves. There's some speculation, are aliens a dying race that needs new DNA to survive? Sure. And then we jump into Rendlesham. For people who don't know about Rendlesham, one of the seasons of Strange Arrivals, spent some time on that, took place in between two Air Force bases. And this guy, Jim Pennington, you know, claims that he had this like download. He basically touches the UFO, has this like rush of information into his brain. Then he says he then goes home and sort of writes out into this notebook and then forgets about until many years later when he's about to be on another TV show. And then he finds it again and it gets translated and has this really cryptic stuff in it.
It was downloaded into his brain supposedly as binary code, which he supposedly didn't understand. And then somebody saw that, a computer expert or somebody who can just copy and paste that into any of a number of sites that will turn binary code into actual words.
It was a translation program, Brandon.
Yeah, it's basically like Google image search, but for alien languages. And what did it say?
You know, eyes of your eyes. I mean, it's just, it doesn't mean anything.
Eyes of your eyes, I thought was really poetic, though.
We're going to have to wait 7,000 years to find out.
Yeah, you're 8,100.
Not to say that this episode isn't chock full of crazy stuff, but we're burying the lead a little bit, which is the final theory that they propose in this is that these aliens are actually future humans who have come back in time to extract DNA from us, modern humans, and cattle and so on, in order to go back to the future and figure out a way to save themselves from some unnamed apocalypse. Their genes are screwed up or whatever, which again, I say, you have the technology to develop time machines, but you can't figure out how to do some what is now considered fairly basic genetic engineering. I mean, if you're still a human, the genes are still in there. You just got to get in there and dig them out.
Is it possible that an alien hybridization project is a benefit to both the extraterrestrials and their human subjects because they are, in fact, one and the same? And are future humans posing as aliens to harvest valuable genetic material in order to take that material back with them and ensure humanity's future?
You don't need to come back in time and kidnap an ancient cow. I wouldn't think. I don't know. But it did seem like it's a lot of work.
The question I had in Strange Arrivals is, if you're going back, if you build a time machine, why is your message so obscure?
Yeah.
Why don't you say, hey, we're dying. We could use some DNA. Mm-hmm. You know, we're going to take some stuff. We're going to go back. You know, we're from 8,000. You won't hear from us again or something.
If you bury a sandwich in this particular place, tell us where it is and then we'll dig it up in the future. That's just Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure logic.
I wouldn't want to be hybridized with these.
No. Who knows? Who knows what would happen in the year 8,100? So it concludes with, apparently, some people think between 15 and 30% of current humans are hybrids.
Yeah, I like that game because that's if it's 30%, that means basically one of us, odds are, could be a hybrid.
I bet on Toby.
You think it's Toby? I was going to vote Toby.
Yeah, I'm outvoted. I was going to vote Brandon. Yeah, and then Giorgio comes on and says, actually, I think we all are because we are all of our DNA was manipulated back in the day.
How can you argue that?
I think it was a strong episode again in terms of you're going to get kind of a fast-forwarded version of all of these different weird theories. They're all kind of stuck together, kind of willy-nilly. But, you know, you really see the liveliness and the myth-making that goes on and, you know, the way that these things are sort of developed and interconnected.
This just seemed to me like a real mashup episode of lots of other elements from other shows and, again, just really throwing all these theories against the wall to see what'll stick. I thought it was interesting but kind of disjointed too, but certainly just treating a lot of theories that they've gone into in the past. I don't know, maybe they really had to pull out of an episode quickly and threw together as much as they could.
Yeah.
This is season 14. It's entirely possible.
Yeah, you know, I keep coming back to this idea that, like, if this was just like a group fiction project and it was like trying to like write sort of a fictional alternative history and not instead trying to convince people that it's actually true what they're coming up with. You know, it's kind of interesting how you try and take all these different aspects of things and try and tie them into a theme, regardless of whether it actually fits. Like, it felt like some of the stuff was like kind of genuinely interesting to see how these different things are kind of folded into the alien astronaut lore. Mm-hmm. And then there's other stuff about like blood types and regression hypnosis, which, you know, in all honesty, didn't seem all that compelling to me. So like Karen said, throw a whole bunch of stuff out there, maybe something will land. And that's where we are. Any kind of last thoughts on this?
Apparently there were all these locations that were also named and they included the Great Pyramid, the Nazca Lines in Peru and Sedona, mm-hmm. you know, in Arizona.
There's others too, like Irish Atlantis, yeah. which I didn't know what that was. That's in there.
Oh, yeah.
There's a couple others.
I always enjoy when they come back to Sedona because it's so different than the pyramid. It's like, you know, this ancient monument by an ancient civilization, these crazy, mysterious lines by an ancient civilization, and then a place with really good shopping and a lot of yoga studios.
Yeah.
Like, okay. It's one of these things is not like the others.
Well, they're just trying to make it all American, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Got to get in there somehow.
Yeah.
The vortexes, the sweat lodges. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Vortexes. Mm-hmm. Karen, you have anything you want to plug? We talked about your podcast a little bit, but tell us where we should find you.
So if you want to check out my podcast with Blake Smith, so Monster Talk, monstertalk.org, and then my website, Karen Stolznow, KarenStolznow.com. So you can find my books there and short stories and things, and you can find them on Amazon too. So Bitch, The Journey of a Word. That's a book about the history and popular culture of the word bitch. And I've written a number of books about language and culture. I write a column for Psychology Today.
Great. What's your column at Psychology Today about?
Well, psychology and language, I write about all really anything that takes my fancy. I just got a deep interest in cognitive science and psychology and language and communication.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Karen. That was very fun.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Toby, another buffet of weird ideas explored, tasted, solved, possibly by us. This has been More Like Ancient Phalians. I'm Brandon R. Reynolds.
I'm Toby Ball.
More Like Ancient Phalians is produced by Heather Eagle Ears Wilson, and our theme song is by Nathan Reedy.
Next time, what are the chances that some people walking among us today are at least part reptilian? Why shouldn't you look up in caves? And what kind of bionic man would $6 million get you today? We're talking about The Reptilian Agenda, Season 14, Episode 8. See you next week.